The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings and salutations to all who have come to listen to this latest episode of the TWBC Podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot. And have a rather special episode here with a rather special athlete, a skier who dominated the world ranks many seasons ago. And for her achievements, she will be honoured by the Australian Water Ski and Wakeboard Federation as being one of their latest inductees into the Australian Water Ski Hall of Fame. Her name is Emma Shears. So good day to you there, Emma.
Hello, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Good. It's always a pleasure to talk to you whenever the opportunities come around, which don't come around that often, whether it be me not being able to make it down to Australia or you not being able to make it outside of Australia, which has kind of been complicated a little bit over the last couple of years, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it's incredibly complicated here. Since 2020, it's been hard for people to even get here to Australia. So our borders have been locked down for quite a long while. And, you know, even our state borders, state to state, we haven't been able to travel interstate. So it's been a really tough time for people here in Australia and for families. You know, I have a sister-in-law who's in Switzerland, so we haven't seen her for 2.5 years now. So it's, it's incredibly difficult for everyone.
Yes, and because it's a little bit of a tricky situation in Australia because the states themselves have jurisdiction for the most part so far as who they let in and who they don't so far as crossing the borders, not so much the federal government from as far as I can tell, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So our state governments have made the decisions when the lockdowns occur and what happens. And Queensland, we've pretty much been in lockdown from other states for over 12 months now. And so have only just reopened the borders in the last few weeks. And so we're having quite a lot of COVID cases here in Queensland at the moment. So it's been really, you know, we're probably only getting our very first taste of what it's been like because we've pretty much lived with it, with not having it at all here because we've been locked down. So
yeah, we'll put COVID to one side for a moment because I'd like to talk to you about some other stuff in regards to your skiing career and all that kind of stuff. So as I mentioned right off the bat, you're going to be inducted into the Australian Water Ski Hall of Fame. That must get you giddy with excitement. I'm sure you've prepared a fairly long speech that we won't hear until about the Moomba Saturday. But how does it feel to be being put onto that kind of Hall of Fame pedestal among some of the greats of Australian tournament water skiing?
Oh, look, of course I'm incredibly honoured. You know, the names that are there before me, you know, they are the names that I looked up to all those years ago when I was growing up and aspiring to be the best in the world. And so for them to honour me in that way, I am, you know, I feel very privileged. I know that not everyone gets to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, you know. So I'm very honoured, basically, and I'm really looking forward to the night. I think it's a night that, you know, will be great not only for me but for my family and those who supported me throughout the years.
All right then, yes, and as I mentioned, it's going to be you're going to be inducted on the Moomba Saturday, which I think it's towards the end of the tournament itself. I think a good friend of yours, Ryan Green, is actually going to be inducted around about the same time. How do you feel about him joining you in the same class, as it were.
Yeah, I think it's lovely, and it'll be nice to have one of my friends there being honoured as well. And, you know, Amber Wing and her husband as well are being inducted. So to have those people who, you know, I had a fair bit to do with over the years, and on the same night, it'll be a lovely evening. And, you know, Ryan's been a member of the Australian team for a lot of years and done incredibly well in his career, and it'll be great to be there on the same night.
And both he and yourself have had long and storied careers. Let's try and go back a little bit, some, because I think about the first time that I actually met you was maybe in about the mid or late 90s. You know, when you were traveling across, and I think you were training for like the first time in Central Florida with the likes of Scott Ellis. Kind of take us a little bit back to that experience and what it was like for someone fresh out of Australia to be kind of thrust into that kind of deal, as it were.
Yeah, well, look, it was a bit tricky. I was a 17-year-old when I landed in the US for the first time. And I turned 18 over there. So it was, you know, it was tough. I was young, and I thought I was going to set the world on fire. And you know, it wasn't quite that way. So it took me a good 12 months of really trying to nut out what it's like to ski in the US and be on tour every weekend. And the work I needed to put in, and I kind of came home a little bit disheartened about how I went that first year. And it went back to the drawing board. I didn't go back the following year, and I took that little bit of time to develop my skiing and develop my training techniques. And then I went back that's following season, and things went quite well from there. So,
well, excellent. And I mean, beyond that first season, where you mentioned you can't kind of little bit of the deer in the headlights type deal with the pro tour and that kind of scene, kind of give us a little bit of a sense of what it was to ski professionally back in that time, because it is like chalk and cheese compared to what a good portion of the skiers have to put themselves through now to be successful, you know, in this day and age.
Yeah, look, it's incredibly difficult. Like, I think we think that it's just about the skiing, but I learned very quickly that it's about a lot of hard work off the water as well. And, you know, it's mentally preparing yourself. It's physically being at your top and not leaving anything to chance. If you're not 100% ready to go when you leave that dock, it's very hard. Those girls were working hard week in, week out, and I had to be at the best to be able to compete with them. So you have to be ready for that.
So, I mean, you were competing against the likes of Sherry Sloan, weren't you, around about that time?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a fierce competitor. Who else was around? Who else were you competing against at that time? I think Lisa Semino was one of those, or was she working her way out as you were coming in?
Kim DeMacedo, and, you know, Dina was still at the back end of her career, but she was still around then. We had Christy Overton, Tony Neville was there every weekend, Britta Llewellyn. We just had some really fierce competitors out there, and, you know, you had to be ready to go. Those girls were always ready to go on the dock, and I couldn't sort of leave any stone unturned if I wanted to compete with them.
Now, whenever you mention a couple of those names, at least, I mean, Kim DeMacedo, who came through and became world jump champion, I think, what was it, in 1993 or something like that. And then Sherry Sloan, who herself was a world jump champion, Tony Neville, absolute legend. And I mean, whenever you mentioned those names, I was like kind of thinking, these women, so far as jump technique was concerned, there wasn't too much finesse involved back in those days to get distance off that 5 foot ramp, and you were the main proponents to actually get off the 5 foot ramp and go to 1.65 meters. So I mean my question is, so far as jumping technique is concerned, I mean, a lot of the women now are more finessed with their approach. Do you think jumping has lost a little bit of that, you know, harder edge when that's concerned, comparing the past era to this one?
Oh, look, I don't think so. I mean, you need to just look at what some of the girls are going a long way now. You know, you just need to look at Jacinta. That's, you know, she definitely has, you know, fantastic technique as well as that grit and determination, and it requires both really. So I know there's probably that little bit more, you know, you had to kind of throw your body at it a little bit more back then because maybe we didn't know as much. But as my career progressed, you know, technique was incredibly important. And, you know, worked with Ray Stokes for so many years. And he really changed, I think, the way jumping was, and, you know, developed a great technique that people, you know, really had to sort of look at and follow.
And as I mentioned, you were one of the main proponents for jumping at 1.65 meters high instead of the 5 foot ramp. Kind of give us a little bit of an idea of what of the struggles that were involved, I guess, from your perspective, because I mean you were above all else one of the main proponents for getting off that smaller ramp. I mean, what did it take eventually for the IWWF or IWSF to kind of see sense in that regard?
Yeah, well, we had a lot of petitions out. You know, all the girls were supportive of that change. There weren't too many that weren't supportive of that change at the time. So petitions went out to all the federations and all the skiers, and you know, it was fairly unanimous that we do change what we do. And we spent a lot of time giving the research to the IWSF about, you know, from all the different physios and biomechanical experts to show that we were capable of doing it. And they were worried we were going to get a lot more injuries and things. So we had to prove that that wasn't going to be the case.
Yes. And I mean, I didn't know how far involved that was in terms of actually having to provide a documentation to show conclusively that women were able to sustain the harder impacts with a 1.65 meter high. I'm just having a hard time trying to fathom the amount of paperwork that was involved. What did that stack look like of all of that evidence?
It was pretty thick. I still have the stack because it was history, and it was you know, I have the signatures and I have, you know, some of that documentation that we went through because it was something that was really important to me, and I felt really strongly that women were really capable of doing this, and I felt that we'd been held back for too long. And, you know, I think the combination of the ramp height and the extra speed it worked really well, and it's still working really well to this day. And it's allowing, you know, women to really show what they're capable of on the jump ramp. And, you know, I'm really proud of that effort.
Excellent stuff. And I think the proof in the pudding is the likes of, well, you mentioned Jacinta Carroll a little bit earlier on, but I mean, she's just become the first ever person to go over 200 feet. Probably wouldn't have happened were it not for your efforts.
Oh, look, I think it would have been incredibly tough. You know, as it is, she's put absolutely everything on the line to be able to do that. And she's worked incredibly hard for a lot of years to be able to do that. So, yeah, I'm really, you know, my brother's done a lot of work with her since Ray passed away, and they've worked hard together to improve her technique and get her to a position where she can she could do that, and you know, it's a real credit to her.
And I spoke to Jacinta Carroll quite a while back before the World Championships. Spoke to her during the Malibu Open, as a matter of fact, and she got really teary-eyed whenever we mentioned Ray Stokes and the contributions he made. But not only was he someone who had a knack of being able to take someone from a certain place and elevate them higher technically, but he also had that kind of knack to work with equipment as well. And I think you know where I'm going with on this one, so far as the tips of the jump skis that kind of bore his name for a while.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, the Stokes tips were kind of revolutionary in our sport. They changed the way jump skis were. And I don't know if you know, but I actually had cut-off tails as well. So I was able to ride a much bigger pair of jump skis, but that inside rail was smaller so I could still turn them. So just all sorts of different things that he came up with. And, you know, he came up with suits that, you know, were much more aerodynamical and helmets that did the same. So he was always thinking outside the box. It's, you know, he just wanted to really improve what he did with his athletes.
How did it feel like to be a guinea pig for some of that stuff?
I actually was pretty excited at the time. I probably, I should have been probably more worried about it, but he always made sure everything was pretty safe before we got on it. So I felt really, really blessed that I got the opportunity to try all those things before everybody else did. So, you know, it was an exciting time, really.
Excellent stuff. So, And talk a little bit about Ray as a person, because I mean we got a little bit from Jacinta a little bit later on last season, but obviously aside from the fact that he was a unique person, a one of a kind that dealt with equipment, but he took a really holistic approach whenever it came to working with skiers such as yourself to get you from one place to the ultimately the place that you ideally would like to be.
Yeah, he worked really hard with us. And you know, he sacrificed a lot of things for us along the way and helped support us. It was never easy for my mum and dad to be able to afford a lot of coaching. And he really discounted a lot of that for us over the years. And he worked really hard to help us as much as he could. And look, he's a great human being, lots of fun and very funny guy to be around. He always made training lots of fun. And I think, you know, I probably didn't have as much to do with him towards the end of my career. We moved away from you know, things that he was doing. But he, you know, he had a big influence in my early days and I appreciate the work that he did with us.
All right then. So, okay, so let's continue on a little bit and try and go in a little bit deeper so far as your career is concerned, especially when it came to the World Championships. When was your first world title? Was I think it was like 1999, or was it just a little bit beyond that, a bit before that?
No, 99 was my first senior world jump championship that I won. So yeah, so I was pretty proud of that. That was in Idriscalo in Italy. So nice.
You also had a go at the slalom event, didn't you? I mean, you were pretty rocking it on top of the slalom ski too, right?
Yeah. So then in 2001, I actually won slalom and I didn't win jump, so I didn't back up the jump that year. So it was interesting. But yeah, 2001 and then 2003, I won both. So that was kind of that was a really proud moment for me to be able to win both at a World Championships. Was pretty cool.
Kind of taking baby steps, win one in one year, one in the other, and then both on the third try around, right?
I know, exactly. So I really, the year that I won my first World Slalom Championship, no one expected me to win that, obviously. That was, you know, we had Christy Overton and that there. She was expected to win that. And we had a runoff to and for me to win that. So, you know, I was only just developing probably as a slalom skier and people were starting to recognize me as a slalom skier back then. I think it was sheer determination that year that helped me to win that. So, yeah, so it's incredible to be able to compete with the likes of Christy at that event.
All right then, and moving right along, I mean towards the present day, weren't you one of the few that actually tried ski flying as well?
Yeah, well, you know, the guys around me who I skied with all the time, you know, developed ski flying. So my brother had a big influence on that as well. And so I was lucky enough to get to have a play with them and get to learn how to do it to start with. And, you know, I absolutely loved it. It was so much fun. But, you know, it's the same as anything when you start pushing the boundaries with, you know, with that ski flying. It was pretty hairy and pretty dangerous at times, but you know, what an incredible feeling, you know, for me to, I think my best jump was 221 feet or something. So it was pretty fun to be able to fly out that far over the, you know, over the water and land safely.
Yeah. And I think play is probably wouldn't be the word that I would use. I mean, considering the risks involved, I mean, cause I mean, that boat must have been jacked up to, I mean, like, 40 mile an hour, 100-foot line, longish ramp. And I mean, if you make one false move, I mean, off the second wake, then you've got hardly any time to refuse, right?
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time. You got to make very good decisions when you ski fly, and everything does happen much quicker. It's about just really making sure you're in a great position when you make your turn and coming into the ramp. And if you can do that, it's pretty, you know, it's just fun. It's like hold on for dear life and see what you can make of it.
All right, and an event that could almost be classified like that a little bit, you know, because of the variable conditions that occur from year to year, the Moomba Masters. And I mean, you won. How many titles did you win altogether on the Yarra River? Because I mean, I recall that you were pretty much unstoppable for several years, right?
Yeah, look, Curtis is the one you've got to ask about all the years and how many titles. I used to just kind of keep heading in the direction, keep going forward, and I never look back much. So I'm really bad at remembering how many, but over 10 or 15 probably over the years. And, you know, I just love Moomba. It was probably, you know, it's my favourite event because the crowds were incredible. People were always really supportive of what I did on the water. And, you know, it was always a great event for me to come back to and have fun with.
Do any of the years particularly stand out? I mean, was there like a major incident or a king tide moving in at, or anything like that?
Yeah, well, we had a lot of that happen. You know, there was those sort of things that would happen every year. There'd be something different that would occur. But when I was in junior member, we had quite a few of those sort of king tides coming through, and we had all sorts of things like cows floating down the river and mattresses and all sorts of things early in the day. But, you know, Melbourne City Council's cleaned it all up a lot more now these days and things are much better. But, you know, there was all sorts of interesting things that used to float down the Yarra, and you'd have to deal with that along with, you know, wind and changing tides. It was always incredibly challenging.
Yeah, and you'll probably be pleased to hear that Moomba is going ahead. Obviously, the tie-in with the AWWF Hall of Fame is going to go along with Moomba with that last Saturday being the induction ceremony. But with COVID in the last couple of seasons, it's made Moomba a very, very difficult proposition for anyone to fly there, anyone to compete in, you know, because there's very little guarantees in life, you know, what with the pandemic going on. I mean the Victoria State Government can just as soon as snap their fingers and no one's allowed to do anything, you know. So I mean, how do you feel about that situation going forward?
Yeah, look, I think it is a difficult thing for people. We've pretty much been, you know, the government's working really hard and opening the borders now. And when we hit 90%, I believe that our borders are going to be open a lot more for people to come in. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that so I can see my sister-in-law. And I think we're not far away from that here in Australia. I think people can be fairly confident now that when they come, it's not going to be the lockdowns that have been of the past. We're learning to live with it all here now a lot better. And I'm hoping that we'll get some of the internationals, and especially just the other day was announced that it'll be equal prize money for the women and the men. And that's something I petitioned for a lot of years. And I'm really happy that the girls are finally being recognised in the same way. So I'm really hopeful that the girls will make the trip, and, you know, we'll get some fantastic competitors out there this year, and it'll be, you know, Moomba as per usual.
Yeah, I was about to ask you along those lines. Thank you very much for asking yourself and answering that question. Yes, because Moomba has decided to go with equal prize money, as has been the case for the likes of the Mastercraft Pro and the Malibu Open, and I think the Masters at Callaway Gardens have done that beforehand. So kudos to all of those entities involved. You know, I mean, you've been a remarkable athlete, and and you've in the last few seasons have opened up your ski school. You're in Cullen Bay, isn't that right? In Queensland, right?
Yeah, we're in Coolum Beach here in Queensland.
Beach, yeah.
So Yeah, so we've actually been open. This is our ninth season now, so we've been here a little while now, and we've got an incredible group of kids that we're enjoying coaching these days. My husband Rick and I, and it's really rewarding for us being able to see that next generation of skiers come through and do really well, and my son's going well and enjoying his skiing as well. So I think for us, it's just about seeing the next generation do well and passing on the knowledge that we learnt over all those years.
Yes, and I mean, what's been the major challenges? I mean, you're almost going to celebrate a decade of being in business at a ski school, and I mean, there are several challenges involved, health and safety and all of that, and it's been complicated by COVID-19, So, kind of give us an idea of what challenges you've had to face and what you've had to succumb in order to keep your facility going for as long as it has.
Well, I don't know if you've got a couple of hours, Tony, but that's that's kind of what it's. Ours has been an incredible journey, and it's been over 20-year journey, to be honest. It took us at least almost 15 years from the time we started to acquire this property to the time we actually were able to step foot on it and start working here. So, it's been a really long process. One I probably wouldn't have done had I known how much hard work it was going to be. But we're here now, and we have an incredible place. And we run a cafe here. We've got an aqua park here. We have a gym here, and we also have the skiing. So we supplement the skiing with those other things as well, which that our skiing's our passion, and the other things help keep it running as well. So it's been tough. We've had to do water tests and noise tests and environmental tests and you name it. We've had to provide the documentation. Here in Australia, you've got to jump through a lot of red tape and a lot of hoops. And so we did all of that. Yeah, we've jumped through everyone, actually. There hasn't been too many we haven't had to. So running your own water ski lake is not the easiest thing to do. It's a really tough thing. It's very rewarding. But at the same time, trying to do the work we've done to be here is probably a little bit crazy.
I can imagine. I mean, it's basically the same anywhere in the world. You want to set up your own business, then you got to go through all the regulatory stuff, health and safety. Lord knows yeah. What else. And kudos for you for actually for keeping up the fight and for keeping going. But As we begin to wrap up this podcast, which I thank you very much for spending a little bit of time with, what with the time difference and everything, it kind of complicates matters, but we're able to get this done. Obviously, one of the major news stories that's occurring right now in Australia, around about the time that I'm talking to you, is that whole Novak Djokovic thing, that whole 11-day debacle, whether he was coming in, he was out, he was in, and then he was eventually given the heave-ho. I mean, there are a lot of people that will view this in a lot of different ways, from being a sports person to someone who's more concerned about health and safety. But do you honestly feel that cooler heads have prevailed and the right decision was made in light of the evidence that was presented and was ultimately given?
Oh, look, I think it's been an incredibly tough time for Australians. We've had to follow lots of different rules and regulations to be able to visit our families, and one of them is being vaccinated, fully vaccinated, and the other one is being, able to, you need to have a proper medical exemption, which it's really proved that he didn't follow those things. Australia, he hasn't ticked the right box on his declaration. He had been travelling in other places. He was not being quite truthful about what he was here, all the things that he was here to do. And so I think as Australians, when we've been through such a tough time, we expect people to follow the rules because we've had to follow them for such a long time. So we don't feel that people can just come in when they're not following the rules as well. And so I think that's pretty much what our country is feeling like right now. And, I know he's been made an example of, but I think rightfully so, to be honest.
So, yes. So he tried... Looks like we've got another guest almost about to make an appearance. So from Novak Djokovic, I mean, obviously it seemed on the full light of day that he was just trying to chance his luck and hopefully go through, but obviously that didn't go the case. Now, a lot of people, especially within the sporting realm, have been a little bit hesitant to actually have a vaccination because they don't know everything that's in it or whether it would have a detrimental effect upon their sporting performance. Do you subscribe to that, or are you someone of the persuasion that, you know, for the sake of the greater good, you have to have it, really?
Well, I think as far as I'm concerned, I'm triple vaccinated, so I'm very much in support of the vaccination. We feel like we can't get back to any sort of normality unless people are vaccinated here. And I feel like, you know, our hospitals have done it incredibly tough and our medical staff, and I feel, you know, to be able to support them in that, in what they're doing and trying to keep us all safe, that we need to be vaccinated as a bare minimum. And then, you know, hopefully we can get on top of this and get back to some sort of normal life, and they won't have the strain that they've had. So that's where I come from, and I'm fairly strong. I have strong views about that, I guess.
All right then. So, and I think we'll put that subject to bed, and we'll also put this episode of the TWBC podcast to bed as well. But typically what I ask of those that I interview at the end is if they have anyone to thank or to acknowledge. So I'll give you a little bit of time to do that, and then we'll wrap it up from there.
Thanks, Tony. I thank my family for the hard work and effort they've put in over the years, and my husband, Rick, who's sacrificed a lot for me as well to get me to the levels that I got to. And, you know, I just want to thank people like Brenda Baldwin, who was a fierce competitor of mine, but also housed me in the States for, you know, 15 years of my career. So I'm really grateful to those people who had a lot to do with my career, and, you know, so many people and so hard to thank, but it's, you know, but I am very grateful at the end of the day, and looking forward to celebrating with them all at Moomba.
Indeed, and I'll be looking forward to hearing that speech and that presentation when the video and the coverage becomes available. Thank you very much. That was Emma Shears. I'm Tony Lightfoot. This has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.